Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Big Move Podcast. I'm your host, Em, from the blog The Lipstick Fever. And today, I'm very excited about my guest. I am sitting down with Marisa Hordern. She is the founder of the jewelry brand Missoma. She started the brand from her kitchen table 10 years ago after previously working in advertising and studying at Oxford. Making jewelry and studying stones was always a hobby she shared with her mother since a very young age. However, she decided to take the leap and leave her job at Richemont to start her own business. Since then, Missoma has gone from strength to strength, collaborating on collections with influencer Lucy Williams and A-list celebrities wearing the brand such as Bella Hadid, Gigi, Margot Robbie, and Julia Roberts. It even has the royal seal of approval, as Meghan Markle and Kate Middleton are huge fans of the brand. Quite the portfolio.
Oh,
welcome
thank you.
To the podcast, Marisa.
Thank you for such a lovely intro. What a treat. I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. We're sitting here in your beautiful office, by the way.
I love decor. I mean, I just love decorating the office, but it's becoming a bit too much of a, I don't know, it's getting a bit cluttered now. I think I'm going to have a little decluttering session.
No, I think it's fab. I'm taking some notes here. So we are in London at your office. Is this considered Notting Hill or not quite?
It's the slightly dodgy end of Notting Hill, I have to say. So, you know, sometimes when we try and, you know, act cool, yeah, we're in Notting Hill, but really we're a little bit further down. But the thing is, the rent is cheap and, you know, we get a huge space in a warehouse style environment. There's not that much around here. I mean, it's okay. It's a 10-minute walk to the market. So that's great. We do go out and get a wonderful falafel sandwich on a Friday normally.
Sure. But
we just get double the space that we would centrally.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
Well, and also I do live around the corner.
There you go. I love it. And that was my next question was like, whereabouts in London are you based now? So you live and work in the same area.
Yeah, so I live and work, yeah, in Ladbroke Grove. And, you know, I did the commute for years and years and, you know, it was great. But I got to a certain point where I was like, there has to be a bit of a sort of a balance. And if I'm going to be the boss, then actually I can you know, take this as my perk. And my perk is that I get to walk to work. So selfishly, you know, moved here. But actually, the space is amazing. And I think the environment you create for your team is more important than anything else because you spend more time at the office than you do, you know, at home with friends or, you know, your boyfriend, husband, partner, whoever it is. And you want to wake up in the morning and think, yes, I'm looking forward to seeing my, you know, my team, my colleagues, because there's a great, you know, atmosphere and vibe at the office. We're really proud of our office culture, but also that, you know, you're in a nice environment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hence all the kind of trees.
No, I love it. Okay, side note, have you been to Gold in Notting Hill?
Oh, yeah,
the
love
new
it.
Restaurant? It's amazing.
I absolutely love it.
Okay.
And I also really like sitting at the bar there. It feels very New York, and I know you moved from New York.
Yeah.
I love a kind of restaurant where you can go and sit at the bar, have a lovely glass of like red. Yeah. Those salads are amazing. I'm obsessed.
Their food is incredible. If anyone needs a Notting Hill recommendation, you got to check out.
Yeah, you got a good one. The other one I really like is the Day Rooms on Kensington Park Road. That's one for breakfast. Trying to think what other ones I can give. Oh gosh, that's now put me on the spot.
No, I love it. No, those are two really good ones. Okay, and a random question for you. If you had to pick one other city to live in or to move to, what would it be and why?
It would be LA, and that is because my boyfriend's in LA. So we're at the moment doing the transatlantic relationship, which is quite
long distance.
Yes.
Okay, how is that going?
He's moving to London and he's moving to London for me. And so I also believe that it doesn't need to be the girl moving for the guy, actually. Nowadays, you know, things can be the other way around too.
So, power to you.
So, I absolutely love LA. I think I would, you know, miss the culture of, you know, Europe and my family, but I do love the lifestyle. And sometimes you do just think that quality of life with the sunny weather and,
I feel like they almost have it too good out there.
Yeah, but then they've got all that traffic and driving. So everyone's
got
something.
That's true. There's a trade-off. Absolutely. Yeah. So getting kind of just right into Miss Emma's brand story, first and foremost, can you just kind of tell us a little bit about your career background?
So where do I start? It's been quite a long journey and a lot longer than it should have been. So I always find that when I do talk to anyone, the key learning is sort of how to do it quicker, because now I know what would have sped it up. But I started at Richemont, which is a luxury goods holding company. So it's the equivalent of like LVMH, and they owned Chloe and Cartier and a lot of watch brands. And but I was at the corporate side, the corporate level at head office, and it was more about aggregated group buying volume. So it was quite just dry, a lot of spreadsheets. And I thought that by being in a luxury goods holding company, I would be on the sort of business side of a creative industry, but it kind of wasn't, creative enough for me. So on the side, and actually before I got that job, when I finished uni, I'd been making sort of beaded belts and sort of gemstone jewelry around the kitchen table with my mum mm-hmm. and my sister. And it had always been just bonding time, a passion, a hobby. And that passion became something that I decided, you know what? If you really want to do your own thing, now's the time. And after a few years at Richemont, I'd been going around and actually selling it myself, like door-to-door to shops. And then sort of, got it into a couple of department stores. I had, went to editors and did desk visits and, introduced it to a few of them, started getting a bit of press on it. And it just picked up a bit of traction very slowly and very organically. And I basically said to myself, okay, you know what? If you're going to give it a go, let's do it.
Yeah, I love that.
The only thing I would say is, in hindsight, yes, that was great, but I didn't really have enough of a plan. And I think I was just too green, and I wish I'd done it with a partner. I think I wish I'd had someone to be that support and, to have the skill set that complemented mine, because sure. we're not good at everything. I'm more creative, I'm more about the brand design, marketing. I love all of that, but you're having to do everything yourself. So yeah, I wish I'd had more of a plan.
Definitely. So I think that kind of segues into my question of, like, was there a light bulb moment or a scariest moment that kind of like stands out in your mind? And it sounds like maybe taking the jump and doing it solo, but was there anything else that kind of stood out to you?
I think taking the jump, and I'm sure you found this probably, yourself, is when you decide to actually quit your job to go for a dream that you don't know is going to make you any money. I mean, you know how hard it's going to be, but you don't really know how hard it's going to be until you're in there. And actually, there were years where I just thought, this is never going to happen. This is never going to come to anything. Why am I doing this? Why am I not back in, my sort of, secure job and getting a paycheck? So there were years and years of sort of doubt and kind of questioning myself. And I have to say that the scariest moment was when I sort of had to make a decision. I did at one point, after a couple of years, get burnout trying to do it all myself.
Right.
It really just became too much. And I thought, right, I've got to do this smarter, because the designs are there, the product, people love it, but how do I make this into a business that A, can scale up, and B, that can actually make a little bit of money? Mm-hmm. Because, all this work and sweat, blood and tears to, just scrape by, we've got to think of another way. Yeah. And I kind of just got really burnt out, but took a season out, went away and thought about it. And that's when I came up with more of a kind of strategy and a plan of how to really try and make it work.
Sure. I love that. It's almost like you kind of hit pause. Mm. It's like, take a step back and then kind of strategize from there.
And I think I know a lot of other friends who also, started brands around the same time. We were all doing, let's say all the trade shows on the circuit. And I think a lot of people do stop after about 3 or 5 years when they realize it may not be going somewhere. Not just a brand, like any, career.
Sure.
And actually, I think that was a pivotal moment for me, because I came back and I wasn't sure if I was going to continue. And I came back and thought, no, this is what I love doing. This is what I want to be doing. I just need to find a way to love it again and to do it better. And it sort of actually reinvigorated me and made me realize that it was definitely what I wanted to do. But a lot of other people, when they got to that point and that juncture, they decided to quit. And that's fine as well, because everyone's decision is their own decision and right for different people at different times. And, maybe they had families or maybe they had other things they could be doing. But I do think you get to that scary moment in your life when you start really, truly questioning. But at the same time, I think if you don't go through those hardships and the long, the hard the hard road, if it comes too easily, you don't appreciate it enough. And then also right. when things do then, you know, sort of sometimes you're on that upward trajectory and, you know, everything's going well, but there will be pitfalls along the way. You don't know how to handle those pitfalls.
Sure.
Whereas if you've been through that kind of long haul, you actually know how to persevere and you know how to put it in perspective, and it actually makes you a little bit stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So what is behind the name Missima? Oh.
So Missima as well, because I started around the kitchen table with my mom and my sister. It's Michelle, Sophie, and me. I'm Marisa. So Michelle, my mother, my sister, Sophie, and I'm the Ma. I don't know why. I put myself last, but...
That's amazing. Okay. And you guys have a very distinct brand style and a place in the market, it feels like. Did that take time, or was that something that you felt like you kind of had established right from the beginning?
I think we always had a distinctive style, but that style definitely has evolved over the years. I think that we're constantly sort of changing and innovating. And yes, it took a while for us to find exactly what works for our audience. And so I think everyone could always tell a missing piece. It was distinctive, but it definitely, you know, has evolved, because when I started, it was much more gemstones. Now it's not really gemstones. It's probably only about 8% gemstones. So things do evolve and change. But I do think even across collections, across, you know, different sort of categories, you have to have a distinctive style that you can't make up. It's either inherent or it's not. And that's what makes a brand a brand. That's what makes something either identifiably part of your brand DNA or not. But yeah, I think that we've definitely honed it as over the years, and we're still honing it. Nothing is ever perfect. It's always a work in progress, and you can always evolve and improve. And actually, if you stand still and if you try and just recreate the same old, you know, thing, that's when you kind of become stagnant. I love to always be thinking, right, what's next? How can we push it to the next level? And I'm always excited by change.
No, I love that. And I think it's relevant for really any business, honestly.
Any business.
Do you have any kind of key branding tips? Maybe it's someone that's like just starting out.
Branding tips. I mean, it really depends. I think that recently, actually, there was someone who did a sort of packaging that was very similar to us. And I know a lot of other brands have had that same problem. And actually, I've been talking now about, you know, copywriting, and I've been talking to my lawyers, and they were saying, you know, it's easier to do something that has two colors combined that makes it more distinctive than just doing one. Because how can you say, oh, that blue packaging is, you know, my blue? Obviously, you can create your own Pantone, etc. But just to say someone else is doing a dark blue and it's similar to your dark blue, even though you know that it's kind of looks very similar, it's got the same, you know, silver, it's got the same look, you need to do. So we're now working on introducing two colors into our packaging that makes it much more identifiable.
Sure.
I think that you need to trademark from the beginning your brand name. I'm now having a lot of problems in China with Chinese who are, you know, trying to trademark, you know, sort of fake companies and
sure.
names for different categories. And I think, yeah, once you find your style, always try and make sure that there is, like I was saying earlier, you know, we're really working on the power of three that is embodied in everything that we do. So from the name, you know, it being my mother, my sister and I, we now have three links on a lot of our pieces, and we're trying to, you know, our claw prongs and our claw collection is very identifiable. So you really want to build on the things that make you distinctive.
Right, definitely. And that kind of leads me into my next question. It feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, this market is really crowded, but you guys have done a really good job of like establishing like a really strong reputation. Has there been like a main differentiator, you would say, for your brand?
I think that because we started so long ago, I mean, it is, you know, about 12 years ago now, which no one really realizes, because whether they've known us now for 5 years, 4 years, or someone's just discovered us yesterday, they always think, oh, it's this overnight success. But they don't realize that it took 10 years to become an overnight success.
Right.
So I think that when we started, there were only, honestly, about three brands, us and maybe two others, who were in what we now call the demi-fine category. So we were, you know, there with just, you know, let's say two other brands at the beginning, and it didn't really exist as a subcategory. Now you're seeing a plethora of other brands doing great, amazing things. And, you know, I love what some of them are doing. And it's exciting to see this category emerge. And even yesterday I was speaking to someone and they said, it's so good that there are other, you know, people in this marketplace, because it shows what a growing subcategory it is and how much demand there is for it. So I welcome that. And also it challenges us because that's what makes us constantly innovate and change and look forward to how can we do it differently and, you know, how can we do something that's a bit, you know, different from everyone else?
Yeah, absolutely. Has there been like a biggest mistake that you've made maybe along the way in the last 12 years, whenever it was?
I mean, too many to count.
And how did you come back from it?
I mean, too many to count. I do think, though, that any mistake, no matter how big, is such a learning lesson. And, you know, I was presenting to our investors, you know, yesterday, actually, and we did all the key successes and then we did the key learnings. And I think you learn more from I've always said you learn more from your mistakes than you do from what went right, because it's all about saying, well, how did you course correct and how did you, you know, pick yourself up again? So yes, I think there are times where I think I haven't listened to my gut and I think I've let other people tell me what they think is the right direction for the brand. And I think that you need to realize that, well, when you are also the creative, you know, director, as in I've never called myself a CEO. Yes, I'm the founder, but I don't presume to be a CEO. Yes, I've been acting as one, but that's not really who I am or what I am. I'm a creative director. So I'm, you know, sort of trying to carve out what our creative brand look, identity, you know, is to our customer. And when people start trying to lead you down a path that doesn't feel right to you, that's often the biggest mistake you could ever make. And I think for a few years, I kind of went into the wilderness when I was being taken down a more commercial path that wasn't true to us. And you know what? I realized that we course corrected, we went back to who we were, but you're never going to really stand up for the crowd if you're doing something to try and fit in with others.
Yeah.
You got to stick to what's true, you know, to you. But I mean, that's more of a, you know, a feeling. In terms of an actual mistake, yeah, spending too much on the wrong people. But again, you've got to listen to your gut.
Right.
Because that's money and that's money you've spent badly, but it's your gut that should tell you whether or not this person is going to be the right team fit. Because you get someone who comes in and they're not the right cultural fit, you know, it can change the kind of like whole, you know, vibe in a team, you know, a department or, you know, in the office. So protecting our office culture and, you know, maintaining the amazing kind of vibe and I think, you know, passionate energy that we have in our office is really, really, really important to me.
Absolutely. Because, right, like we're saying, like, the more you grow, the more that can kind of like get left behind. Because how many people do you have in the office now?
So we now have 60.
Okay.
And, you know, it's grown really fast. It was 45 last year and before that it was probably 30. So it's really hard because I'm so passionate about company culture and because of my early days at Richemont, when I have to say I did not enjoy my working experience there, I said I never want to be someone who treats people the way that I felt that I was treated. And as a result, we have very flat structure. Everyone, there's real openness, inclusivity. Everyone can come with an idea and everyone be credited for that idea. You know, no one else takes credit for your work. And, you know, even let's say one time I was, I don't know, I'm doing an Apple presentation in the Regent Street store. And I was sort of standing up talking about our designs, but I also brought up my two other designers to talk with me because I'm not going to take credit for their work. So it's very much that culture here.
Sure. Right. Just an open sharing.
Yeah. And rewarding people, saying thank you. It's a culture of gratitude. I mean, apart from the fact that we have thank you notes that go around, we then take people out for, you know, lunches, let's say once a month to say who went above and beyond. Different, like, you know, team members get voted. Obviously all the different, you know, extracurricular sort of stuff we do outside of the office. We have charity days in lieu of work. I think, you know, it's something we still need to work on. We're not perfect, but we're kind of going in the right direction.
Yeah, I love that. So what are some staple pieces from Missoma? What are you guys kind of best known for? By the way, I love like your whole situation. Like
going on here. Yeah,
yes.
A lot of chains.
Yeah, so lots of chains and like all gold, which is my absolute favorite.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for gold. But we are actually trying to do more silver because we get asked about that a lot. And I think that we've ignored our silver customer and we really need to try harder. And actually, I'm really into mixed metals at the moment. So mixing it in.
Sure.
I think we're known for our layering. You know, we have always loved layering, and we don't sell a product, we sell a look. So we've always been about that total look. And it doesn't need to be that it's head to toe Missima. It can be a mix of different brands. It can be vintage pieces, something, you know, from your mom or your grandmother or something you've picked up in a flea market. It's about self-expression. And that's what makes, you know, you you. So the kind of the way you wear it and the way you mix it, there are no rules. And that's what I really love. And I think it's just about you're buying it for yourself. You're rewarding yourself. You deserve it. And you know, it's not something you aspire to. You can actually also afford it.
Right.
So, you know, but you're also buying great quality. So I think we're really known for those chains, the layers, the pendants, and, you know, mixing it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're now working on some really exciting, thick, chunky chains, and we're making all our own chains. So all the links are actually designed by us, again, to try and avoid some of the copying.
Sure.
And counterfeits. So, you know, those links are really distinctive. And again, we're working on it being that is a distinctively Missima piece.
Yes. Okay, that's perfect. And you guys have had some amazing collaborations. One that has been such a huge success, obviously, Lucy Williams. Can you kind of talk us through how that all came about?
So I think one of the things about our growth journey has just been the fact that it was kind of very organic, slow, and also authentic. And I think that's what people really resonated with when we had the Lucy Williams collab, was that Lucy and I met, we got on so well, became friends, both had that same, well, a different aesthetic, but that complemented each other. So, you know, her vision and my vision, we just kind of got really excited about working together on a capsule. She's a complete jewelry fiend. She's like a little magpie when it comes to jewels. And we just came up with an idea, had no idea how big it was going to be. The launch event was on my kitchen table. I kid you not, it was in my tiny little flat on my white kitchen, like, you know, we're talking whatever you call it, a white lacquer kitchen table. And you know, now when I think 5 years, you know, later, just we've carried it on because it always felt right. And we wouldn't if it never felt right. But it's just one of those things where I think people respond to that because it wasn't something, you know, anyone, she was being paid to do. It was something she loved, was passionate about, you know, and wore every single day. And that's the thing. What I think you find with Missima is that, you know, people might be, let's say, paid to wear X, Y, or Z on the red carpet, but then you see them every day in their Missima. And it's the one that people kind of like go to for their everyday look, you know, it's their choice. And I love that. I just love the fact that you can go from, you know, the office to a night out. Or, I mean, for example, for me, one of my highlights was seeing Margot Robbie at the Vanity Fair kind of pre-Oscars party in Missima. But then I think the next day or 2 days later, she was at the airport wearing it. And 3 days later, she was in Australia surfing wearing it. And I just loved the fact that you'd gone from this kind of high glamour in transit to then on holiday style. And it just looked great every time because, and you could see that it was something she really loved and was passionate about. So I think that's what's really been part of the, you know, the response from our, you know, kind of customers or our followers or people discovering us, is that they just start seeing it everywhere because, you know, people are choosing to wear it, not because it's kind of very obviously, you know, sponsored or paid.
Right, right. And it obviously translates across all of those environments. That's incredible. And they're like your daily staple pieces.
Yeah.
I love that. So switching gears a little bit, we are in 2020. Everyone's kind of like hitting the refresh button, maybe trying to stick to their New Year's resolutions, if you will. Do you have any tips or things that you're doing this winter to kind of like set you up for success for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm definitely not doing a dry January because I don't believe in that.
Amen to that.
So I did start with the usual, okay, I'm going to get healthier, I'm going to be fitter, I'm going to look after myself more. And I've already fallen down on most of those. But what I would say is I did do a 3-day juice cleanse from Plenish, who are actually in our office building as well. And
convenient though.
Yeah, convenient. and it was tough because obviously it was during, you know, the working day, but one of my colleagues has done it as well. You do feel like you've reset a bit, and it did just help that, you know, they're not something that I would do all the time, but just to try and reset and then eat a little bit less afterwards so that I wasn't sort of eating those huge portions that, you know, you'd gotten used to over, you know, Christmas and all that sort of turkey and eating. And so I felt that it just reset a bit my body and just a bit of a detox. And then I could go on to eating, you know, normally and healthily, but just in slightly smaller quantities. So that I felt really good about.
Isn't the first day the hardest?
I was actually okay the first. It was that second day. And by the third, you're sort of okay. But maybe everyone's different.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember doing them in New York. They were kind of like very on trend then.
Yeah. And I don't think like I wouldn't be able to do 5 days. They're like, oh, five. I was like, no way. I mean, we're gonna find three difficult. But then what else have I done? I tried to go back to the gym, but then I put my back out. I mean, that's what happens when you get old. I literally put my back out. And then I was like, okay, well, I was just feeling really good after one session. Okay, that's the end of that. What else have I been trying to do?
Yeah.
Declutter my flat. I love doing that. Sure. At the beginning of the year, you do a massive kind of clear out and sort of charity giveaway of the stuff that, you know, you haven't worn in the last year, because quite frankly, if you haven't worn it a year, you're not going to. And then also just declutter all that crap that just lies around and just builds up. And I want to feel a bit more zen when I come home in the evening.
So true. I literally just did that with my husband and it was amazing.
It just feels great. Well, especially with a baby on the way.
Yes, exactly.
So good to do.
Right. You just want to like button up everything and just throw out what you don't need. Mm. And we're in central London, so minimal space. So
yeah.
So is there anything exciting coming up for Miss Soma that you'd like to share with the audience?
Ooh, yes, I would and I will. Ooh, one other tip. Sorry, I've just remembered.
Yes.
Meditation.
Okay.
I started doing just 5 minutes and it's really helped me focus and be more clear on my intentions and just de-stressing and decompressing. And it's just 5 minutes. I think everyone tries to tell you do 20 minutes twice a day. I mean, it's really hard to do that. I can't do that. 5 minutes, just as and when you can. And it could be once a week, twice a week. Don't be hard on yourself, but just sometimes just take that little time out for yourself.
Are you getting up and getting out of bed and then sitting somewhere else and doing it for 5 minutes? Or like how does that work?
I'm not really doing it in the morning, actually. I know a lot of people say that's great to set you up for, you know, the day ahead. I'm just not really a morning person. So I'm doing it more at the end of the day to decompress. But everyone's different. There's no rules. There's no right or wrong.
Right. Okay. Right. Just going for it and doing it at some point, I think is beneficial.
But I think, you know, just, and sometimes also you just need a little bit of quiet time, you know?
Absolutely.
Everything's so hectic and busy and sometimes you just need to just sit there and chill.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Totally.
Back to Miss Soma and exciting news.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have a lot going on and actually this year is a really exciting year and I'm trying to think what I can and can't say. Well, we've got a new collection coming out next week, which I'm so excited about, called Twisted. Now, the whole concept behind this is something that actually I feel really, really passionate about, and so does the team, and we're really excited about it because I think it's got a message. And what we're trying to do is we're saying, listen, we're not all two-dimensional. We all have so many different like facets, sides to ourselves, dimensions, and you know, sometimes we hide parts of ourselves from the world. Sometimes we kind of like don't show, you know, everything that we're kind of, that, you know, we're thinking or that makes, you know, us who we are. And we're saying, you know, I describe myself as classic with a twist. And then everyone we started talking to who was, you know, our different customer from, you know, all different ages and places, et cetera, they were all saying the same thing in a different way. It doesn't matter whether it's with a twist or, you know, with a quirky edge or with a playful edge or, you know, plus a bit boho. Everyone just said that they were classic with a something. And we just thought, wow, let's celebrate that. Let's celebrate the fact that that weird and wonderful, that quirkiness is something really special and unique and not something that we should even be, let's say, hiding. That's what makes us and that's what makes us unique. So Twisted is celebrating all of that. And so we're going to be asking people as well, like, what's your twist? And it's just been a real, you know, coming together of a design that was all about the kind of the plain side and then the twisted side and the fact how they, you know, interweave or come together. And we're just saying, you know, let's celebrate all sides of us.
I love that. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And then, then we've got a big campaign in April and that one's going to be a mega one. Can't talk too much about it, but I think it'll be, you know, our big collection this year. Been working on it for about a year. It's so exciting. And I think we're going to be sort of maybe trying some things where we kind of come out, you know, and see people and, you know, do a bit more of a touch and feel and more of an experience. So all trade secrets at the moment, but, you know, watch out for us, you know,
amazing.
Coming to you soon in April.
Yes. Can't wait to see it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. This was an awesome conversation. I really appreciate it. Before you go, where can everybody keep up with you, find you, and find Misama?
So, well, obviously our Instagram, so Misama London. And obviously we also have like stories on our website. It's called M Stories, and it's a section where we just sort of talk about different things, be it, you know, vegan January or, you know, what books we're reading. And we're sort of telling the stories of the team, because I haven't really talked about it, but, you know, the team is everything. And, you know, we're only as good as our team, and our team are amazing. So, and then obviously, well, on a personal level, yes, I'm trying to do more on Instagram. And it's Marisa Horden. But yeah, I'm not very good at it.
Amazing. Well, we'll link out to everything so everyone can find you. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for coming to chat with me.
Of course. And thank you guys all for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. And we'll see you on the next episode.